You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 285, Nintendo's Titanic.
Welcome to Season 7, Episode 285 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 12th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and getting together is Green Garb and Four Leaf Clovers, my brother James Furlough.
Yeah, that's right. The St. Patrick's Day is coming up. I honestly haven't been paying close attention because finished my bathroom.
Aw, yeah.
So, finally got that done.
Nice.
So, super excited about that.
That is very exciting.
Yeah, I'm done, and I got like one or two smart features, maybe three, depending on how you look at it, in the bathroom. We've talked a little bit about it, so I've got a smart sink.
Yeah.
Or a smart faucet is what I'm calling it. Essentially, it's a touchless faucet, and so that's cool. It's just like in your public restrooms, but you can control hot and cold, which is nice. And which I think is great. There's a couple weird things about it. Like, for whatever reason, Jessie cannot get it to activate when she is using her toothbrush. She just can't figure it out. I don't have that problem for some reason, but
yeah,
she does.
But obeys you.
And yeah, and then what was the other? Oh, there was something else. Like, I was shaving this morning. That was a little weird, but. Because it didn't pick up my razor, so I would have to put my hand behind it and then do the razor thing. But you know, I'm like, whatever. How's it any different than normally having to grab the handle and put it underneath? So I don't feel like I lost anything. And then I got a smart soap dispenser to go with it. So again, it's touchless.
Nice.
and then I have a smart scale. It's a Withings smart scale. Now, what are they? Nokia smart scales, I guess.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And, it tells me that, and I don't have anything smart in the shower. I really wanted something. Like, at one time I was like, oh, it'd be cool to do like the Philips LED lights, and I could have mood lighting.
There's an obvious one here, James. You gotta get one of those ones where you like, you can set the temperature and it like pre-warm up.
Yeah, I looked into that. It's not as cool as it sounds.
What?
It's like this box that hangs off your shower head.
Mm-hmm.
That it's funky, and what it really does is it runs your shower until it gets to the temperature, and then it stops, so it's not just continually running. And again, it's this big box thing, and I don't know, it just wasn't quite what I was looking for. I may change my mind, but I don't have a smart mirror. That was the other route that I could have gone down. Like, there's been different versions of that where like with displays information on your mirror when you're getting
ready.
I may do that in the other bathroom.
So I will say this. This is one of the coolest ideas I've ever seen. And it was at a hotel in England. And you walk into the bathroom and you flip on the lights. And it turned. And then I jumped in the shower, take a shower, and I come out. And most of the mirror is still not steamed after taking a shower. And what I realized they did is they put light bulbs behind the mirror so that it would heat up the mirror and keeps the steam from building up on the mirror.
You know, there's a much easier solution.
What is it?
Than that. You take a bar of soap, and you take a little washcloth, keep it dry, rub the soap, and then just rub it on the mirror and kind of buff it out. No steam will form.
Doesn't that leave like a residue of soap?
Nope. Well, I guess, but you can't see it.
Hmm.
You buff it out. And totally works. I've done it. It's awesome.
I don't believe you.
No steam. Trust me, man. No, yeah. It's a little weird because you're like, it's like in Peter Pan when like Captain, no splash. It's kind of like that where you're like, there's no steam.
Captain, no splash.
I love that scene.
That is weird. Oh man, oh man, oh man.
It doesn't require light bulbs. It's not smart, obviously. It requires elbow grease, and that's you have to reapply.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You gotta reapply whenever you clean your bathroom.
This is super not exciting, man. Whenever I clean my bathroom, how often is that supposed to be hot?
Well, that's a different issue. But yeah, so it's done. And we organized a garage, so it's kind of a big week for that.
Man,
home update. I got a smart faucet. Say, I want one everywhere now.
I went up to our grandma's cabin for the weekend. So that was a lot of work being done. And by work, I mean sitting around, keeping fires going.
Okay, I wasn't really sure what you meant by that because it's still wintertime, so you're not actually doing. Is there snow?
There was a little bit. Yeah. Actually,
what counts as a little bit?
A couple of inches, but a patchy where we were at. I mean,
gotcha.
There was still a berm coming into the driveway that my girlfriend tried to drive through, and I was expecting. Like, she was like, "Hey, should I just drive through this?" And I was like, "Yeah, just plop,
sure,
plop through it. No big deal. Snow. Right? It's not gonna hurt you." And I'm thinking, like, you know, like you gas it pretty good, and you just like pop through it. And she took took the understandably more conservative approach of driving through it slowly.
Until, I mean, you are headed down a driveway, yeah, I suppose.
Until the center of her car had compacted snow to a block of ice, and not all of her wheels were touching. And by not all, I mean basically none. You'd go in reverse, and she's four-wheel drive. So, like, you'd hit it, and, like, all four wheels would start to spin. You're like,
this is
going to be...
Do you have to get out and push?
I couldn't. Just, it was, I mean, the car was stuck on a block of ice. So
you just leave it there?
Eventually, well, no, that night I ended up going and grabbing shovels and...
Yes!
Shoveling out the snow from underneath the... She, you know, and obviously she helped out, too, but it was a... It took us a little while.
Yes, she was the one who got it stuck.
Exactly.
Of course, it was based on your recommendation, though she didn't really do the spirit of what you're asking.
I will say, wait. You said recommendation there. She said, should I do this? And I was like, yeah. It was a teamwork thing. You know what? That's the important part. But we got it out, and we survived. It was nice. And
you didn't use any high-tech... street warming light bulbs to melt the ice.
Yeah, well,
that's what we should have done. Extension cord, get some light bulbs out there. I hear it works pretty well for defrosting things.
Exactly. It's funny trying to like run the car, just like left the car running, hoping that the car would heat up the snow and melt it. Didn't work, and had to shovel. But
it doesn't work in homes either when they put heaters in ceilings.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Works on airplane. Works on airports though. That's how they keep snow off landing strips. Like where it snows,
keep the planes running, or
no? Oh no! When they do like a heated floor. They have to put like miles of hot water piping in the landing strips. And
how is that different?
What?
Like that sounds exactly like what you would want to do. Hot water rises.
Yeah, that's exactly what they do.
Saying in the ceiling.
Oh.
Like they used to put heating coils in ceilings.
Yeah.
To heat up the house.
Oh.
That did not work.
Right.
If you put your hand in the air, you could feel it for like 3 inches down. But.
Well, why would they do that?
Because the power company subsidized the installation of all of them.
But why did they.
So contractors would do it as a selling point.
But why would they. I'm so confused. Like, what was
a low point in the history of building? I don't know.
Okay. What it wasn't like,
I mean, you get the power company's incentive.
Oh yeah, but what was their
incentive? Give them a super inefficient way to heat their home. They have to keep it on the entire time. This is brilliant.
All right, okay, I see.
And contractors go, you mean I don't have to spend money for a furnace? You'll subsidize the whole thing? Love it.
Gotcha. I'm on track. I'm on board.
It's all cool, right, man. It's a good show.
But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about heating and cooling systems unless that's something that somebody talks about this week. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw your way.
Yes, I work for the printing company that I also founded, of HPI. However, I do not represent any of their 2D or 3D prints or any of their weird opinions. I also own part of the direct competitor of Snapchat, Twitter, and Etsy, and Lending Club. Those ones don't really compete as much with Snapchat.
Yeah.
And I don't think we actually listed Facebook's news. That's all right.
You know, it's funny. I guess, this is exciting. This is such a weird week because it was like there's that giant CIA dump, and it, like, you'd think that would be right in the bell horn of what we talk about. But the more and more stuff that came out, the more and more I realized it's just not that exciting. It actually isn't. Like, it's one of those things that it's like. People who are complaining about the fact that the CIA made these weapon systems, like, I don't care that our government has weapon systems as long as they're using it on somebody else and not us. Like, and then they lost these weapon systems, but Apple and Google are already like, yeah, we've closed most of those loopholes. We knew they existed. Like, it just doesn't, I don't know, whatever. It's just, they're so, oh man, we got some good stuff this week, but there was a lot of boring stuff that people tried to turn into good stuff this week.
Yeah.
And if you want to get, like, if you want to get just the cream of the crop, important things, you know where you go, James. You can go to our Twitter and our Instagram.
Where do I go?
My Twitter is at Matthew D. Perlow. My Instagram is at NextWiggin4. Check it out.
So I'm helping out with this video project at church, and we're trying to get the rights to use these videos that we found online.
Yeah.
And talking about new world, like, I'm struggling to contact them. I tweeted them today. It's like, hey, who do I talk to get the rights for these videos? If that works, I'm going to be so impressed. God, that'd be so sweet. Yeah.
Connecting them through Twitter.
When Facebook was still young, I was at school, and this part of my fraternity, we had to regularly coordinate with the campus Greek Life Association. They're like the people in charge of the fraternities and sororities.
Yeah.
And one of our presidents throughout the period, he was having a really hard time getting a hold of the woman who was in charge of it all, like the head of Greek Life at University of the Pacific. And, like, he just could not get a hold of her through, like, emails and, like, calling her. And one day just posted her a Facebook wall, and she responded within 5 minutes. And, like, we all had this, like, moment of, like, oh, well, this is the world we live in now. This is like 2008, 2007, and sometimes, and it's social media, man. Especially when it's on the public forum, people respond because they can't ignore it without everybody knowing.
Totally true.
Just ask the president.
Anyways, James Frillow, everywhere.
Awesome.
Twitter.com.
Yeah, complain on our Twitters. We'll respond. Probably.
Yeah.
If you want to get all the articles we talk about this today, go to frillowbros.com. Check it out. We got all the links to all the articles, videos, audio, anything we talk about will be there. Also, if you'd like to, we've got a mailing list so we can deliver that all to you. It acts as this, like, great little summary of the week, perfectly curated for just the interesting stuff and not the boring stuff that doesn't actually matter. That's where we're at.
So, I don't know how to start this. I'm probably going to start this way. I hate being wrong, no matter the magnitude of it. And I'm continuing to be wrong. I'm really hoping that I pull this one out at the end, but at this point in time, I continue to be more and more wrong. And I am specifically talking about Google's communication strategy. because they continue to make it more complicated.
Yep.
I didn't know this was possible, but they are making it more complicated. And for the record, right now we are doing a Hangouts live on air, or whatever it's called, that you get to it. The only way that I know how to get to it right now is through YouTube. Now, we almost did this in their new Meet video app thing.
Yeah.
Because I actually have an enterprise account that I signed up for and got running before they started charging for it.
Mm.
And so I've got one for Frizzle. It's awesome. And so I could try these things. Went to it. Was like, all right, sweet, I'm going to use it. I tried it on my work computer earlier today. Worked. It started up. It was great. I'm like, sweet, we're going to do this evening. And turns out it requires Chrome, and I use Safari on my Mac. So it was like, sorry, download Chrome if you want to use it. I'm like, oh. I guess I don't really want to use it. We'll go back to the consumer side of things where it uses Hangouts.
Yeah.
And it all works because it just uses a plugin. So that's a very long way of saying that Google introduced a new version of Hangouts. I guess one could say two new versions of Hangouts, but only for enterprise or their G Suite customers. So... We need a matrix.
I know, we really do. Well, because so for those of you that didn't listen or don't remember, James and I during our prediction show talked about Google's messaging strategy, and I flippantly and pessimistically predicted that Google would have more messaging applications than the year began with. Now, technically, I think that's. They don't have any more named services, but they have
That's not true. They have Meet and I already forgot the name of the second one. Chat.
Right.
And Hangouts Chat.
Yeah, you're right.
Which, by the way, is not Allo.
Yeah.
And Hangouts Meet is not Duo.
Yeah.
And
it's not there.
Hangouts, the consumer version, because if you want to do something on your computer, you still have to use Hangouts because Duo and Allo are not available if you're a consumer.
Right.
I don't even know.
They got their they have multiple messaging apps still for Android. They got their new one that they're trying to push, but they're not getting rid of any of the other ones that they've got going on. They've still got all of their
So
it is amazing what they are doing with their messaging strategy.
Here are the two new ones. So it's Hangouts Chat and Meet. Chat is like Slack, which that actually sounds pretty interesting to me. I want to do Slack so bad I can't stand it.
I know
If Google will let me do it, I'll do it. But anyways. I know I have perfect use cases and I'm just not strong enough to be like, we should be using Slack. Where is it going with this? Oh yeah. So they have a chat, which is exactly Slack with some of their own stuff, like their searches and whatever. It all integrates with all their Google stuff, of course. And then there's Hangout Meet, which is specifically video conferencing, where you can actually embed meetings and have codes that people dial into, just like the experience that you have with the enterprise version of Skype, where you can embed the URL or the meeting thing into the meeting. You click on it, loads you up. Again, it's cool because it doesn't use a plugin, unlike the consumer version of Hangouts, where you need a plugin, but it works on all browsers, so that's cool. This one's just Chrome, which I found out, and again, it's just if you have the Google Suite thing. So essentially, not their standard gmail.com, but you gotta have an email address that an independent domain. I don't know if I'm describing it well. The G Suite, the paid version, essentially, right. It's $5 a month per user. Unless you're like me and you got an early. I just keep saying that. And I keep waiting for them to be like, oh, you wanted that feature? You're not a paid account. Sorry. But apparently they're so cool with that. They do have bots, apparently. So... that's another thing. So very similar to Slack in that regard. And they're like, and to make things confusing, there's a bot called @meet that can help you schedule things, and it integrates with Google Calendar. You're like, huh, yeah, that's a little confusing. But yeah, I thought this was interesting. The Verge wrote a thing, and they're like, a coherent direction for Hangouts. Finally, I was like, what? No.
Yeah.
This is not coherent. Because one of the things they said is that eventually they plan to bring these things to the consumer side as well.
Okay.
Like, you know, if it works out well. And yeah, I don't know.
I can say, so what is that? What is The Verge positing is that coherent direction? Because this doesn't feel coherent.
I don't know.
I guess
it's one of those things where what they're saying is it's the idea that they're going to have Hangouts focus on business. Hangouts will be business eventually, I guess.
Which, yeah, okay. So,
I don't know if YouTube on air.
I'm just going to go
Hangouts if that counts as business. I don't know.
I'm going to get a little.
I just don't get it.
I'm going to get a little.
It looks cool.
I'm going to get a little pedantic here for a second.
Do it.
I'm going to look up the...
I don't remember what that means, so I'm going to look that up.
It means that you're really picky about the particular words that are going to be used. Like you're overly into making sure people use the correct grammar, word definition and stuff. If they said that there was a coherent strategy, the definition of
a pedant, by the way, is the definition of pedant.
I know, I like it. I've stumbled into that. It's, yeah. It actually makes me not want to use the word pedantic because I'm like, it's kind of weird.
A person who is excessively concerned with minor details or rules or with displaying academic learning. Hey, that's, so you are being a pedant by acting pedantic.
Correct. So,
okay. All right.
Coherent.
I think you're in the clear here.
We're looking
I think I just pedantic to you in your definition of pedantic.
Precisely. So coherent, defined as united as or forming a whole. Isn't the definition of what they just did more divisive? It divides it into more pieces and makes it less coherent.
It reminds me of like the when Microsoft before Office. Which one is it? Windows? I can't remember if it was before Windows 10 or whatever, where it's like you'd have to have a matrix to figure out which version of Windows do I need to buy right now?
Yeah.
It's like, wait, am I a student? Am I at home? Am I a home professional? Am I a professional? Am I in the enterprise? Is it just for myself? Is it with my family? Is it with family and friends? Is it for a large organization? I mean, it was like, there were all these different choices. Well, and which software versions did you actually want to use? Because some of them only come with the top four. Some of them you might want to access. And it was the same like, oh my gosh, I need like a wizard to help me out, figure this stuff out. And it's like with this, and this is like at least with Windows or Office, like you had to fumble through it once. And then once you kind of made the decision, you're like, okay, I'm stuck with it until I refresh. You know, like,
right.
And I felt, and you were okay with that. You had to struggle through it once. And then done.
Yeah.
For this, it's like, all right, so I would like to text this person. I would like to video chat with them. What should I use?
Yeah, I'm going to...
What system am I on? It's like you never just ask once.
Right. There's not a...
It's every time.
There's not a coherent system for communication. There's not one place where you can like... And the worst part about it is they're all Google properties. So it should be theoretically possible for them to have like... To keep track of where you're signed in, what services are available, where and when. Like, you'd think they could put together at least a giant list and say, do you want to talk to this person on Hangouts, Hangouts for Business, Hangout Chat, Allo, Duo, you know, like, Google Voice, Google, like, go through, like...
Yeah, that's right. That one's still out there. I forgot to mention that one.
What is going on?
I do not understand... I just don't understand. I don't feel like I need to qualify that anymore.
Yeah, it's...
And again, it all looks cool. I want to try Hangouts Chat. That looks cool.
Well,
their Google Meet, or Hangouts Meet, or whatever it's called now. It looks neat.
Well,
I think Allo and Duo look neat.
I can say that's consistently the problem, though, right? It's like you get these great technologies. It's Google. It's all really well built and performs well. They don't launch faulty products that the messages don't ever get delivered, or like they don't work across platforms, or they don't. You know, like Google's really good at building a shippable product. The dilemma here is that this is like you said, the reason why Facebook works is because if you go to Facebook, you can find whatever it is that you want to do, however you want to communicate. They got a bunch of different options, but they're all kind of you know, it's you've got the most important option, which is just go to the website and everything's kind of there. As complicated as it is, it's unified. Yeah, I mean,
you could fault Facebook for forcing you to change when you may not be ready to.
Which we do.
This is a little like this is too much in the other direction.
Yeah, and it's you know, and it's a classic Google system of they've got different groups competing, and the end result is that it's like Messenger becomes all the more alluring because it's simple and easy to use and everybody has it, or you know, using a different messaging app, just get somewhere where everybody's kind of unified and there's a unified list and there's a unified all we really want to do is talk to each other. Like they're fighting against themselves. That's the weirdest part of it. And I think that a better strategy, like I said, would be like at least a unified starting page to be like, yes, this human being is signed into all these different services attached to their account. So you can contact them on any of it, whatever you're in the mood for. But do they got to start tying it all together?
I did like that initial thing about Hangouts where, I think it was Hangouts, where for a while it was like, at least on the chat stuff, it was like, it works in Gmail. It works in Google Plus. And I think somehow it was integrated with voice before that kind of split off into its own thing. But at least there was a time where,
yeah,
maybe there's their Google Chat, where it was like, yeah, it works everywhere the way you would expect it to.
Right. It was like
and that was cool.
Yeah. And it was simpler and didn't have as many features because it was unified across all these different platforms. Like, it had to be. But that makes more sense. Like, you know, but that's the one that we always say. You know, and honestly, and that's the part that it was Google Plus, I think, was the real death knell. It was this attempt to bring everything together.
Buzz was the precursor.
That's true.
It totally flopped and made people upset. And so then they're like, all right,
And ultimately, I think this is the most upsetting part of me, is that Google does have one of the most successful messaging platforms out there that everybody already uses. Why not just take Gmail and turn it into something, whatever you want it to be, and like have Gmail be the central hub of existence? Like, Gmail is their like chief messaging app, and they like what are you people doing? Oh my gosh,
they're trying to kill it. That's what they're doing. I hate it.
That's the worst part, right? It's they're super frustrated with Gmail. They think it's terrible. And how do you move beyond it?
They did other stuff. They redramped their drive. They got like file streaming things, and I don't know. I'm boring myself just talking about it.
They announced the longest list of unexciting stuff this week. It was pretty amazing.
I'm sure it's exciting if you're an enterprise IT person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's like, yeah, exactly.
There's not.
And, yeah. It's, oh, Jesus, boy. But you know what's kind of fun?
Let's talk about something else we're not experts in.
Yes. Being really attractive. So, James, are you really attractive?
According to my wife, yeah.
Nice. Are you really attractive according to Tinder's general population?
You know, I'll be honest. Came along after I was kind of already pretty serious. So, haven't used it regularly. Actually, I don't think I've ever used it.
Yeah, so it turns out I had it for a while and to no success.
Yeah, were you a special power user?
Yes, I was. It turns out that there's a Tinder doing their thing. They're pretty good at like getting their advertising messages out there, and they've really. I talked about this back when I was using it. Part of the fun of Tinder is that it's a bit like Hot or Not, which is kind of, you know, it
just a little bit.
You say, well, a lot of it, right? It plays to some baser instinct in us that's probably not healthy, but it's fun and it's enjoyable. and so they've taken this a step further, and it's now gotten out that there's a thing called Tinder Select, which is baked into the app.
Tinder Select.
Yeah, it's baked into the app. But if you are if you are successful on Tinder for one reason or another, whether because you're rather attractive, or because you're rather popular, or because you're rather rich, Tinder wants to include you in this small group of exclusive users.
I love the description of those users.
What was, yeah, CEOs, supermodels, and other hyperactive, upward affluent
attractive,
types.
Hyper-attractive.
Oh, there we go, sorry. Yeah, that just makes more sense. it's currently unknown how Tinder decides.
Which, it says, which sounds like a miserable artificial landscape, if you ask me.
Yeah, I know. yeah, it's currently unknown how Tinder decides who should graduate from Tinder for the masses and gain access to Tinder Select. But yeah, either way, sorry, regular humans, you've got no easy, or you've got no easy in right now. Invitees are allowed to nominate another person to join the Tinder Select ranks. Yes, that's really what the process is called. But the nominees can't extend the same courtesy to anyone else. It's just one hop. Visually, Tinder Select has its own style with colors. Yep. Accent replacement.
I guess that stops it from, I don't know, not being select.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's, which is funny because it's like, this is, there's all sorts of apps that like they, that have tried to like pull this off. Like we want to be the dating app for the super hot and rich and connect people together who, you know, need to be connected or whatnot. Yeah, I mean, they're good at like, because this is just a, these, like, I saw this article on every single news feed. And it is just a, hey, remember how Tinder is a popular dating app? Like, advertisement that they got for free. This is, like, the definition of earned media. You know, cater to athletes, cater to CEOs, cater to people with a lot of money and wide social networks. Tell them they're part of this super exclusive club, and they'll talk about Tinder Select, and then the word gets out to the normal people that, like, oh, Tinder's this like super hip and up and like cool place to be. And I don't know, it just, I only got respect for a company that can do this with their brand. It's because that's what I look at this as, right? This is just an advertising, this is the part of their advertising marketing like branch, came up with this clever idea. And it's working like a charm. We're talking about it. Come on now.
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting. I mean, it definitely... I don't know what the way to say it is. It definitely... There's something weird about it, you know, but... Well, at the same time, you're like, eh, whatever.
Okay, say, I think it builds into like the ethos of what Tinder is, because it's like the fact, like I start out with the whole, it's basically hot or not, but with like a chat client built into it, and
yeah,
if you both hot each other, then you get to chat, and so they're like at its core is this kind of weird, shallow.
Maybe just we take it too seriously. Maybe that's, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's just, I don't know. It's so good. Especially because I feel like the app is, especially because it's like anybody you talk to who's like, I seriously want to get a relationship. Like, you start with Tinder and then you jump onto something else if that's what you're going to be going with, to go somewhere else to find and meet people, something with a little more substance. And I think that's the irony of Tinder, right? Is that it's just, it's not really as effective as, and,
which, you know, if you're not into the long-term relationship yet, cool. Which, yeah, there are people that,
and I'll, that's be, their attitude. And I'll be honest, like, even within, like, the hookup culture, like, granted, you know, I'm not as many of my friends are doing this as they used to.
Because you're getting old.
I know. But there was a day and time right when Tinder was at its prime, and that was sort of, like, what it was used for. And I will tell you what. It was not nearly as useful at my friends getting, like, my friends who just wanted to hook up for a night, like, it was not, that wasn't their ace in the hole. Like, maybe it would turn up some, like, some dates and stuff, but, like, mostly, I think the reality of it is, like, think about the sort of person that you would, that's going to be like, yeah, I'll connect with you over a hot or not based app, and like we'll meet randomly and see how things go. Like, I feel like there's just this, there's a context there that makes things difficult on every level, which is what makes Tinder all the, like, that's what makes me respect Tinder's success all the more, because I feel like their app doesn't actually work that well, and for, like, for any of its core purposes, yet we all know what it is, and we all, like, talk about it, like, it's this, oh, yes, you wanna go meet some sexy people and hook up, you just go to Tinder, and that's, it doesn't even work that well for that. I think that's the funniest part to me.
I kind of want to ask, what do you do instead? But I don't. I feel like that's headed down a different direction. You just, I don't even care.
You just meet at a bar. I mean, it's. I think
there we go. All right. Yeah. That makes sense.
You know, the face to face thing is, it's amazingly effective at meeting people. I don't know.
Or at least making that same swipe left, swipe right in your head.
Right. So yeah, it's what you're doing in the bar, basically, and.
Which is why it works, because you can be bored on a train and it gives you that same
exactly
buzz feeling at the bar.
Yeah, but in a bar you've got the advantage of they're drunk making that decision and everybody's a little
it's true.
I don't know. I just you know, it's not. I'm not advocating this activities. I'm just analyzing it as a scientist and kind of respecting Tinder for capitalizing on it economically. But yeah, so
okay.
I don't know, interesting stuff, but yeah.
So question, I'm probably going to ask this for like a month.
I know.
So did you get a Nintendo Switch? Apparently everybody else did.
Yeah, I know. I didn't. As I've said on more than one occasion, I got a 3D printer. So it was like the same pot of gold got spent. And
I finished the bathroom project.
Yes.
And whenever I do a project like that, I buy way more than I need. For example, I bought two shower doors.
Okay.
Well, one was for 48 inches, the other one was for 60 inches. My shower turned out to be 49 inches.
Oh, that's not super annoying.
Maybe I could make this work. And turns out I couldn't, so I had to do the 60. But the point being, I just bought both. Why not?
Right.
Ended up returning about $1,000. Yeah, which feels great because you're like, oh, sweet. It's like I just got $1,000.
Yeah.
I have to tell myself, I know it feels that way. That's not
how it works. No. That is what happened, James. The government.
Like unspent that.
Say, the government gave me my. When I did my taxes, they gave me money. That's how it works.
Cool. Actually, I submitted, which I should follow up on that. Submitted my taxes because I finally finished my project. But all that to say, like I felt like the, oh man, I got some coin in my pocket now. How's that Switch look?
Yeah.
I did not, but
one of my coworkers is flying to Hawaii in the morning, and we were hanging out at the end of the week, and he was just like, man, I feel like I kind of want to buy it just for the trip to Hawaii, you know, so I have something to do while I'm flying to Hawaii. And I was like, that is exactly the reason why I bought my 3DS. That is the only time I use my 3DS, and it is perfect for that. It's fantastic, man. Like, just go for it. So he ended up buying the game because that was still in stock, but the console wasn't in stock. So he had to meet up with a dude on from Craigslist later that day. And paid a $50 premium to pick up which I was like, you know, honestly, it's not bad. Like,
yeah, that could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, people.
I was expecting you to say you paid double.
Yeah, me too. Even just $50 ain't bad. And I was like, show up.
Though, I don't know, man. A flight to Hawaii, like, I don't know. Just watched a couple movies, but
dude, that's not. He's looking for an excuse.
Oh, right. Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Yeah. So, like you said, I think the big news here is that the Nintendo broke its weekend sale records. It's the fastest selling Nintendo console of all time.
I feel like that's impressive given, well, the Wii was kind of a slow burn,
yeah.
I feel like, where it took. It reminds me, this is going to be a really weird analogy. It reminds me of the movie Titanic.
it's funny. I hear you, though. I hear you completely.
Where it was like, their opening weekend, not that impressive. But it was the following weekend where it went off the charts huge. And it was because, I don't know, for whatever reason, it wasn't a big deal. And then word got out, like, no, this movie's fantastic. You need to go watch it. And, yeah, so, and I feel like the Wii was that same way, where they released it. Yeah, there was demand, and it probably made records then, too.
So just so we can, because this is worth bringing up. So by Monday morning, or by Monday morning, Titanic had grossed $28 million nationwide. By Monday morning, the next week, it grossed $88 million. And by Monday morning, the week after, it was at 160. So yeah, the first weekend it made one sixth of what it would make in the first three weekends, and then that's the Titanic.
And yeah, usually it's the opposite,
right? Yeah, no. Yeah, that's an incredibly weird graph for any movie. You actually saw it that opening weekend, right? Like it went nearly empty.
I did. I had no idea what. Yeah, I did. I was at a friend's house spending the weekend, and because that's what you do. And was I in high school? I feel like I had to have been in high school, maybe middle school.
Yeah,
I was right on the bubble. Anyways, I was at a friend's house, and his dad was like, "Hey, there's this new movie, Titanic. I'm thinking about going to watch it. You guys want to come?" And I was like, "What's the Titanic?" And my friend was like, "Really? Like, yeah. Should I know what that is?" And he's like, kind of went across the ocean, iceberg, sunk. I was like, oh, yeah, cool. Sounds like fun. Let's go. And the dad had not vetted it at all, right? He was like, yeah, let's go. And if you've seen the movie, you know there's a couple scenes in there that, like, middle school. What year did it come out? Did it have it on yet?
Yeah, it did. But 1997, so I would have been.
I was 7th grade.
Yeah,
I was 7th, 8th grade.
Yeah.
So, middle school.
Well, it's funny.
Watch that movie.
You invited me to come, I remember, and I was like, I was in 5th grade at the time, and I was like, I'm not interested. And I didn't go because I was not interested. And
okay.
But like fair that's enough. How little vetting had gone on. As a 5th grader, I was invited to come with you.
Yeah. And which was a good call in retrospect.
Yeah.
And like I said, a couple scenes where he was kind of like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first like 3-hour movies too that I feel like was released. That wasn't really a thing before that one came out. And so anyways, we watched it and I was like, whoa, that was really great. And then it was like that Sunday, our pastor actually talked about it. And drew some good stories out of it, and this idea of like you never know when your life's going to end. Make sure you make a decision. You know, I mean, like it was good.
Yeah.
Which like that was this thing of taking whatever's happening in culture and applying it to the Gospels and like making it relevant. It was fantastic, actually. And then it was kind of like, oh yeah, that did happen. That is a great way to look at it. And then it blowed up since then. I kind of felt like the Wii was the same way, where it came out and it was like, oh, there's these controllers. There's this thing called Wii. Wii Sports. Yeah. And yeah, it was pretty fun, but it wasn't until you tried it, usually at a friend's house, where you went, oh, this is awesome. Yeah. I mean, even for me, I was like, I'm a Nintendo fan, and had it, and I was like, yeah, it sounds interesting. And then I played it and went, I am now buying this. I just have to figure out how to convince Jesse that I am buying this. And for her, she was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I was like, no. Come play it, and then tell me it's the dumbest thing you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And she took one look at it and went, wait, these are wireless, and you can move them? and that's when I smiled and went, I'm getting a Wii.
Yeah.
and it was like, we played for an hour, and we got done, and she was like, yeah, let's go get one now. Like, let's do this.
Yeah.
And so it was this similar thing. I feel like the Wii U was a major letdown, and so then there's that same pent-up demand. I feel like, too, despite the sales of Mario Run not being what they wanted, even though they were good, it pre-stoked.
They did a couple of things. Well, it was like the Nintendo Classic, what is that thing called?
Yeah.
That was a huge, just reminding people of why you, of the pedigree of Nintendo, the the legendary titles that had come out of their platforms, you know? And it just, they did a lot of things right that kind of reminded people about Nintendo, got people excited for Nintendo, and they also did a good job of showing off the Switch so that it would be more of a known quantity. People would understand what it was they were buying. Whereas, like you said, I think when...
I think we better understood what the Joy-Cons are in the context of the Wiimotes. You know, where you're just like, oh, okay, I get it. They come off and I can use them. Cool. I know what that means.
Right.
You know, whereas before, it was just like, wait, they're... I don't understand. You move them around? I don't know. It was so hard at the time. Right. But now it seems so obvious. But yeah, so they sold a ton of them, huh?
Yeah.
That's cool.
A lot of them.
I'm guessing supply is going to be constraints, and so week two is not going to look great, but it's not their fault.
Yeah, probably. Which is, you know...
I gotta come up with a trip. I think I almost was heading to Boise, but now I'm driving up to Vancouver, which that's only like an hour flight. Not quite justifying. When I have an iPad, and I'm still kind of in like the, I can watch movies on the plane.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Video on demand.
That's the best, honestly, being able to bust out the, it's the only reason I bring my iPad with me when, it's the only thing. What's the? Jeez, I'm getting distracted by my computer. Sorry. Yeah, that's the only reason I bring my super old iPad with me, because it's doesn't do anything else, but it connects to the internet pretty well and doesn't render web pages very well, but it'll like play movies on demand. So it's got a pretty good battery life, and so I can like open up the app for Delta or whatever, or for United, and watch movies on demand on my little device. It's nice. I like it.
See, I just preload stuff, and I'm good to go there. But, yeah, whatever. I mean, so I'm still kind of living that dream. But I think if I get to take a longer trip, maybe I'll use that as my own justification.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, the other big thing that they did well is they launched this game that is just blowing up like crazy.
It looks like a ton of fun every time I watch it. I watched a trailer with Jessie trying to convince her, like, this is cool, which didn't work at all, but I didn't expect it to.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But it does look cool. Just big problem solving. Man, it reminds me of Ocarina of Time, or just like, oh, you're just out exploring the world.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna happen.
Well, and they've clearly learned from the sandbox style games of what's it called? Of Skyrim, where Skyrim isn't nearly as big on the plot of like a cohesive storyline driving along all your exploration, where that has been a common feature of Zelda games. So even the ones with really big worlds with a lot to explore, you're still kind of going from place to place based on a coherent storyline, and you go from one area to the next area to the next area. And
yeah, they do a good job of, because I've tried to play like Ocarina of Time, I've tried to play it out of order.
Yeah,
you know, because it's like, man, this particular level would be a lot easier with this tool. I'm gonna try to get this tool.
Yeah.
and it let you do that. I mean, you couldn't beat the game because it invariably required something from a previous
right
world level. I forget what we call them. Temple, yeah, but you could at least get halfway through and get your thing,
right?
And then loop back, and so I had a bunch of minor complete, and then it was like I went from like no temples completed in like a day to completing them all.
Yeah,
it was just kind of like boom, 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 run through them really quick.
One of the beauties.
I need to get back to gaming. So, I need time for this, though.
Yeah, tell me about it. Well, one of the I don't have two kids, and I have that struggle. One of the things that Skyrim did very well is
that was a fantastic game.
That's so good. Is that there were a bunch of different parts of the world that you could go to, and a bunch of different skills that you could work on, and you could basically go to any town and sort of start as a newbie or relatively, you know, fresh. Go in, complete a bunch of things in this region or area, build up your skills, and then go to the next region and struggle in the next region as well. And it was just like, it was a very big game, and it felt like you could get, you, it felt, it, it's definitely the sort of game where you can replay it multiple times in, and it has, if you, as long as you pick a different city to go to first, or a different skill set to work on, you are going to have a pile of struggles, to like a different pile of struggles to work with. I know. And this sounds like this is what this game is. And it's just a lot of little fun tricks to try out. And you build a good game. But one of the interesting things about it is they've got the creator, the main guy talking about it and stuff. And there are interesting observations and thoughts that he has about, you know, game development and making fun games and storytelling and stuff. But I thought one of the most interesting ones was, so originally this game was developed for the Wii U, and so they, one of Nintendo's big thing was they had that like little TV remote control panel thing.
Oh yeah,
it looks like a bigger version of the Switch, but it connects to the console. And one of the things that Nintendo really pushed was
dumb.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll get there.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the things that Nintendo really pushed is they wanted there to be a purpose for it, right? So they wanted game developers to take advantage of the second screen. So either have different gameplay elements or extra information or something, but a reason for it to exist. So the developers of the new Zelda game really went out of their way to take advantage of that. So much so that there is a...
I thought, by the way, the idea of having a football playbook that no one else could see.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good idea. Because you could always kind of, like, look and at least get an idea of what the person was thinking. And if they had certain tendencies, if they flipped to a certain screen, you're like, okay, I now know the play you're running.
Right.
And it completely removed that from the equation. And I was like, that's cool. So competitive sports...
Maybe.
Like that.
Which but you I'm only had... I said, but, makes sense. But only one of you could use that controller at a time, which kind of...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because there was only one per system. So there's actually a tool that you can use in the game that's basically a tablet that was meant to be like you would. Yeah, so Link, the main character, would be using this in-game tablet. And it would be reflective of the tablet that you were holding, that you were playing with in your hand.
Huh.
And they ended up having to change a lot of the gameplay elements because they didn't have that with the Switch. And so they really relegated it to a smaller portion of the game and changed up the gameplay. And the creator was like, that saved the game.
Wow, yeah. That's quite the statement.
It's
like a classic Apple move. You know that previous product we had? It was totally misguided and horrible. I can't believe you guys actually bought that. But this new one, it's awesome.
It's seriously, yeah. In order to make the experience,
I love it when they do that. Remember how thick that thing was? It was so awkward to hold, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, how did you even hold it up, you idiots? Why did you buy something so dumb? When we started testing it out and trying different configurations, we realized that it actually works better if you keep your focus on the TV screen rather than going back and forth between the second screen and the TV, he explains. And we started to flesh this out. It really turned out that this was the best way to enjoy the game. And he's not being quite as bombastic as I am when describing it, but I think that is the core issue to this. Like, they had this, one of the reasons why the Wii was so successful is because they had this new way of interacting with the game system in the Wiimotes. This idea that they're motion controlled and they responded to your movements and it was a full body thing. And you could, you know, just all the different ways that people now understand, like, wow, that was really a big change and it was quite revolutionary and really fun. Well, Nintendo wanted to do that again, and that was what they were trying to do with the Wii U tablet thing. And so they wanted this new way of interacting with the gameplay. And, yeah, it just turns out that it's not really that – it's not that good. They thought that – because this was modeled off of the success of the DS, which is their mobile gaming platform, right? And it's named the DS because it's a dual screen. That's literally what it is. You have the big screen that you'd have.
I know that.
Yeah, you'd have the. It's a clamshell, and it opens up. And there's literally two screens. Yeah. There's the main screen that you're looking at, and then this smaller touch screen that you can interact with. And the trick there ended up being that it kind of functions as one screen.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of look at both really quickly, but it turns out looking down at your controller and looking up at the TV screen, it just doesn't work as well. It's
just disorienting, huh?
Exactly. And it's just...
It's not cohesive.
Yeah, yes. And, and it's just amazing how, like, you get to this point where you're like, after all this time, it's...
You know, I've got to imagine that stuff's hard to figure out until you get a bunch of games and a bunch of people trying it. And I don't know, maybe there's one of those things where it's like, well, maybe these games aren't great, but developers will figure it out and they'll create some pretty cool things with it. Like, could totally see people talking themselves into that.
Or almost worse, you pick out one or two games where you're like, where, like you said, with like sports games, where you sit there and go, this is an obvious use case, and I'm sure people can come up with other ones. And so maybe you find one or two games that it's like really, it super works well for it, and it turns out that...
Of course, once you said it was one per console, I was like, oh, yeah, never mind.
Right. Well, but I mean, even if you, let's just assume that you can get it to work, but you only, you know, you right. come up with a list of like five titles that you're like, these are really going to take advantage of it, and obviously, and this will show people how to take advantage of it. Well, it turns out that the list of titles that really work well with that is five games long.
Five.
You know, and that happens as well, you know, where it just, I've been watching.
Like, I heard that Mario game was pretty good that used the tablet.
The Mario Maker.
Of course, I heard that was just a fun game in general. Yeah. That was probably despite the tablet.
Yeah, that's, it's one of those things where it's honestly Mario Maker almost works better as just a touchscreen, as a touchscreen tablet. It just so happens that the fact that it projects on
I was thinking it was like Mario Brothers or something, wasn't it? Like, where you could play all the different characters. It was a scroller.
Yeah, are you talking about Mario Maker?
Mario Maker?
I don't know. Mario Maker is the one where you could like make the different Mario levels.
No, this is definitely played. Oh. It was like a launch title.
Okay. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm gonna look it up though.
But you know, it's funny. I was watching I've been watching videos on machine learning and stuff and like the history of it and artificial intelligence.
Super Mario Bros. New Super Mario Bros. That's what they called it.
And
don't buy it for $60 on Nintendo.com.
Jeez Louise. But they one of the interesting parts about it is how like artificial intelligence funding has gone through cycles where it'll really peak and then it'll pop and it'll kind of collapse again and as interest and potential rises and wanes.
Yeah.
We're probably going through a bit of that right now, admittedly, where there's a lot of funding going into machine learning, and more money's going in than there's necessarily value. But there was a time during the 80s where that was another one of the big, like, real expansions, and tons of money was being put into it. And because there was a couple of really super early successes with a couple of strategies for developing artificial intelligence, and they were like one of those things where guys would come up with these solutions and thought, oh, this should work, this should generalize, and then they implemented it and made the companies that they implemented it for like tons and tons of money, really, really, really successful. But it turns out that it was like actually a strategy doesn't generalize at all. It only works for that specific problem that you created that specific solution for. And that became, and so once they kind of, so they spent all this money only to realize that, this is actually a really bad strategy. And so as that strategy collapsed and kind of went away, all the money dried up. And even though people were already talking about neural networks at that point, the money went away. And so it really wasn't until, you know, years later that more research was done and more examples are shown. And this is only tangentially related, but it's that idea of like, sometimes you come in thinking that you've come up with a couple solutions and you're like, oh, well, these are obviously like, this is going to, you know, 'cause the iPhone was a perfect example. Steve Jobs came up with a couple of things that made it work. Right. It was like, you could change the keyboard and it's got like this snappy thing and it's got the touch, and obviously people will figure out what to do with this, but they didn't really know that. They came up with a couple of solutions that worked pretty well for specific instances and just hoped that it generalized into a good solution for a lot of different problems, having no idea, even at the onset, of how good of a general solution it was to tons and tons and tons of problems. And you can see evidence for that in the fact that they had no plans for using it as a gaming platform early on. That shocked
us. No apps, right? Yeah. Like, you browse the web, the full web. That's the thing. HTML5, yeah. No Flash.
It exactly. It surprised Apple as much as... It surprised Apple as much as it surprised... Well, maybe not as much, but it surprised Apple how successful it was. So, you know, the fact that Nintendo got it right on one system and then wrong on the next, like, it happens, I guess. No, but it's perfect. This one, I think, is a little more predictable because it's a little more predictable. You know, and at this point, it's just execution. As long as they execute well and they continue to develop software and stuff, I think it'll continue to be a success because it's... In principle, people get it as a solution to a particular problem. You know, I want a cross between a console that I can play on my TV and something that I can take on an airplane with me. And they're like, well, this is it. And now, as long as they can get their controllers to work, which they can't, and as long as they can get the battery life up, which they can't, and as long as they can, But honestly, as most of these situations are, as long as you got good games coming out, people will be fine. They'll
get into it. Which they got at least two.
Exactly. Zelda is a seller. That's a huge advantage. If they can come up with a good kind of new breath on Super Smash Bros., that will be a smash hit. Obviously, whatever Mario they come out with will probably be a pretty big hit too. And, you know.
Yeah, they're going to do a Mario Kart, Smash Bros. I mean, there's some pretty, like, yeah, this should work. Yeah,
and not to mention, you know, Mario. You know, they always pull out all the stops for that one. It's a tried and true and fun, and yeah, it's a company that knows what it's doing. They get a couple of system sellers like that and killer apps, as they're described.
Man, I'm gonna buckle eventually. I can just feel it.
I may not. I'm pretty happy with my PlayStation. I'll be honest. It's been my PlayStation VR has been filling my video game niche, and
that's cool, man.
We'll see how I can keep that lag going. One of the cool things about it, and honestly, another piece.
They came out with a football game. I might be done. So that's like.
Well, so speaking of video of games, one of the biggest problems that the Nintendo has had over the last couple of years with their systems has been. Their first-party titles, the stuff that they make, are fantastic. But third-party titles just are kind of rough and don't really work. And they have taken a completely different strategy with this system for kind of making it inclusive. And number one, we've talked about before, the idea that they use Unity, which is a graphics engine that they don't, or they support Unity, rather, that they didn't build. So... It makes cross-platform development way easier. So if a third party is developing for the PlayStation and for the Xbox, it's going to be easier for them to bring it over to the Switch, which is huge for bringing third parties in. But they're also doing other things, like the fact that the Nintendo Joy-Cons, which is their controllers, they work with Bluetooth, standard Bluetooth, and without any adapters or anything... They connect to a whole bunch of different devices. They connect to basically everything.
Really?
Yeah, they without like anything, they connect to everything except an iPhone/iPad. And the reason why they don't connect to the iPhone iPad is not their fault. It's Apple has locked it down unless you pay them a bunch of money and get wrapped up in their accreditation program. And Nintendo has not opted to do that because. Apple has specific criteria that your controller has to fit in order to pass it, and the Joy-Cons don't fit because it's like number one, two different controllers with different button configurations. And so Apple's like nah, it's not gonna happen, and which I'm totally bummed about because I sit there and I'm be like Nintendo, sometimes you guys are so stupid, like. Why not? Why not chase down like the PlayStation controllers, the Xbox controllers, and the Joy-Cons. Like, this is just so perfect for opening up your system. Like, your whole problem, why nobody plays video games on your system, especially the Apple TV, is the controller problem. Like, how do you control it? There's not a good controller solution. And people don't want to go out and buy $50 proprietary controllers right. that aren't that quality. Like, whereas me, who has a play, if I could just connect my PlayStation 4 controller to the Apple TV, I'd be buying games on the Apple TV. Like, that seems so easy. And if you're somebody who has an Apple TV and a Nintendo Wii, like, or not a Wii, sorry, a Switch, like, I don't know. These guys are, Apple's crazy. I don't get it sometimes, James. But, yeah, so.
Yeah, you know. It
so we're Nintendo.
Coughing up a storm here. It happens.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff, though. Oh, man. We have to stop talking about them. It's just going to make me buy them.
I know. That's why I keep bringing them up every week, man. This is my new weekly update, is the Nintendo's, what cool new thing Nintendo did this week. I'll throw in at least one article.
What thing did Nintendo do this week? Appreciate that.
Yeah, so there was a...
Appreciate that.
There's a cool article that Walt Mossberger... wrote Walt Mossberg, who writes for The Verge. He titled it "Tech's Ruling Class Casts a Big Shadow." And then he posits the question: is the dominance of the Gang of Five healthy? And I think this is one that, you know, I'm interested to hear your opinion. Basically, what happens is there's the Gang of Five. Apple, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon. Sometimes we'll refer to them as the horsemen of technology. They're the big dogs. They are multi-billion-dollar companies. They drive a lot of tech development and the direction of tech development in a lot of ways. There are very few companies that try to do what Uber and Snap are trying to do, which is to develop a product, get the interest of one of the Gang of Five, and then scorn that interest,
and then spurn them.
Yeah, and try to build your own company, and to approach that and become one of them, or unseat one of them in the case of Snap. and what Mossberg is basically saying is that because of the position of these companies, you end up in this place that may not be healthy. And he talks about these as an oligopoly. That's the word. We now have in consumer tech in 2017 an oligopoly, at least superficially similar to the old industrial era American corporate groups that once dominated key industries. He's, you know, to be clear, I'm not alleging that the Gang of Five is colluding with each other to fix prices. But I do think their enduring and growing power casts a shadow over Silicon Valley, casts a shadow over the Silicon Valley legend that there are lots of great new consumer tech innovations being incubated right now in garages or dorm rooms somewhere that will be taken all the way to becoming great companies the way each of the Gang of Five was. What I fear is more likely to happen to any such startup, if they're good, that they'll be acquired by a member of the gang, or their ideas turn into a feature of one of the gang's products. And even if that happens, the startup thrives. Too often, it can only thrive being successful on a platform controlled by one of the gang members, with the big guy maybe taking a cut. For instance, Snap, the parent company of Snapchat, which went public last week, famously spurned the $3 billion takeover by Facebook, but it's dependent on its very operation on the cloud services of Google and on the mobile app platforms of Apple and Google. So, basically what he's saying is, and this has been a classic thing in the Valley, is what's your exit strategy? You know, when you talk to investors, the question is that they always ask is, okay, what's your product? How much money do you want? What's your exit strategy? In other words, how do I cash out at the end of all of this as your investor? I'm going to take a 25% stake in your company. And where do I get my money eventually? How do you exit? Well,
show me the money.
Exactly. Yeah. Snap's exit strategy was, I'm going to IPO. You're going to give me your money. I'm going to hang on to it till we're big enough. And then one day we'll sell it publicly and you can sell your stock and exit that way. But for a lot of companies, the exit strategy is simple. They basically say, look, we don't want to make money because our product doesn't make any sense as money. We want to get to scale. Like, we are going to have a hard time trying to make money with it. But what we can do is become very attractive to a company like Apple or Google or Facebook or Microsoft or Amazon, where they'll look at us and say, hey, this is a company that has a product that on its own doesn't make any sense, but part of our portfolio or part of or a feature on our device or a core technology makes a lot of sense. So we are going to buy that company and fold them in. And so instead of having these companies that sort of grow up and become their own thing and their own successful products with their own everything else, you've got these startups that their entire reason for existence is to build up a particular feature, get a user base for it, and sell that technology and their services to one of the Gang of Five. And
love it.
And as Mossberg points out, that even if you don't do that, because the Gang of Five are so powerful, you're either selling the product on Amazon, using the iPhone as your primary app platform, using Amazon's cloud or Google's cloud, or you know, you're all over the place.
Yeah, our podcasts are hosted on AWS.
Exactly.
We're doing this right now on a Google product.
Right. We want you to like our profile on Facebook. We want you to go check us out on Twitter. We want you to blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Nobody is independent of the Big Five. All we do is talk about Apple some week, so
do we need to talk about big electricity at any point?
Yeah, well, I sooner or later, I mean, Tesla or what?
No, I'm just saying the idea of, like, you know, we all are dependent on electricity and these utilities.
Yeah,
attached to them.
Well, I think the difference is that well, I guess it's the point, right? It's part of his point, is that that very problem came with the electric company, and the very nature of the infrastructure of the electric company meant that you could really only have one, otherwise it would be a complete mess. So we decided that they would become a different type of company. They wouldn't compete in an open market. That wouldn't be their form of regulation. They'd be heavily regulated, and they would become utilities. And so that is the question, right? Are these things utilities now, and we don't treat them like utilities, so is this a problem? Mossberg kind of gets into their purchasing strategies. To refresh your memory here, just a few more famous examples. Google bought YouTube, DoubleClick, Android, and Nest. Microsoft bought Skype, Nokia, and LinkedIn. Facebook bought Instagram, WhatsApp, and Oculus. Amazon bought Audible, Zappos, and Twitch. Even Apple, which typically shuns big deals, doesn't even disclose its many smaller acquisitions, bought its own chip design company, PA Semi, Beats, the headphone maker and music service, and Siri, the voice-controlled assistant service. In nearly every case, these acquisitions and more obscure ones have made the gang even more powerful and ubiquitous. Can you imagine Google today without Android or YouTube? Can you imagine Apple's iPhones and iPads without the super-fast custom processors or... for all of its flaws, Siri, come on, Mossberg, that was just mean. but yeah. So that's kind of, which is one of those weird ones, because it's like, what did Google buy when they had YouTube compared to today? You know, if YouTube existed as an independent company, like, what would it be compared to what it is as a property of Google? And
remember, they used to have Google Video
too. I know, yeah. Well,
totally separate site that they shut down and folded it.
Which is what Mossberg brings up next. Another way in which the gang, with its legions of engineers, extends its power is by aping the features of other tech companies' products and incorporating them into their platform. Two recent examples.
Yeah, what does it say about a tech company that's so powerful, like Facebook, where they go, yeah, stories is a concept. Yeah, Snapchat started it, but we're continuing it.
Yeah.
I know. Just like the newsfeed. It's all good. One could argue they've done it in way too many places, but they're so powerful. They're like, we're not even apologetic about it.
Right.
Anyways, continue.
Yeah. And so it's, I guess the question here kind of becomes like, is this a good thing? Good thing bad thing, James, if two choice is binary.
Two choice is non-binary.
Yeah.
I think today it's okay.
Yeah.
I think today it's a good thing.
That's not one you're on. Okay.
It's
a good thing.
It's a good thing today. Because it genuinely makes their services valuable. There is still competition. You think about like hosting. All right, you don't have a ton of choices, but you have at least two. You have Google and AWS. And those two compete. If you want to do email or office documents, there's a couple choices there. I don't know if Apple's one of them, but you at least have.
Wow. This is a beat on Apple episode. I was getting on them earlier. You're getting on them. Mossberg's getting on them.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Come on with a new product.
They deserve it. Launch something new. We're in the middle of March already. No date announced. Come on. They deserve it.
It's true.
So, anyway.
Excite us. Dance.
Yes, we are not entertained, okay? Anyways, so it's like for some of those things, yeah, you know, there's options out there. I think for VR, there's a couple different options out there. Facebook hasn't totally taken the monopoly on that. For your social network, okay, yeah, there's one choice. For doing searches on the internet, yeah, okay, there's one choice. And I think if you're going to buy something online, okay, all right, for the most part, there's one choice.
There's one dominant choice, and then there's and there's a plethora of competitor
specialty.
Choice. Yeah, it's like I can't tell you how often, like especially with electronic stuff, I'll go online, I'll look for something, I'll find it at their shop, and then I'll go to Amazon just to Christ compare and realize they've got an Amazon shop set up where you can buy the same thing, but it's got Amazon Prime, and so you're like, okay, cool, I'll do that, you know, and
yeah, which they're okay with. And so, I don't know. At this point, I think it's a good thing.
Well, I think it goes back to what I remember we talked about this before.
These things are constantly shifting. I hate to be this way, but it wasn't a few years ago where he was like, there's only four horsemen.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about five. Now, and I hate to be this way, like, you know, Microsoft was on decline, right? We were kind of counting them out. We were having fun starting to beat on them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, hey, they're back. And things change.
Yeah.
You know, something's going to come along, or everyone's going to have a cell phone or a smartphone, and sales of that are going to start to slow down, and either companies are going to figure it out and move on to the next thing, or they'll just slow down, or they won't, and someone else will come in and pick it up. I don't know. I'm not overly worried about
it. Right. I mean, and it's, you know, for all of the, it's been fun to be on Uber for the last couple of days, but you could easily see them become one of these oligarchs and either knock somebody else off or just join the gang, because they, you know, in you got this massive growing platform that's going to be really important to the future. And
Tesla's one of those that's kind of knocking on the door from a very different angle.
Right.
Clearly focused on physical products, not software solutions, but you're like, man, I could totally see them where somehow they're involved. It has a very clear thread between all of them, and I would not be shocked at all for one day for SpaceX and Tesla to be for all intents and purposes, to be one company. I mean, right. They're already kind of close.
Yeah.
In the same way where it's like, is Blue Origin separate from Amazon? Is that true?
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, I guess technically on paper.
Well, I'm going to say, you can't think of those companies without thinking of the CEOs, because they're these cult of personalities.
I bet if they're honest, they don't think of them as separate companies. As far, I know for a fact, I mean, come on. For Elon Musk, it's all part of the same vision.
Yeah, he's trying to save humanity from itself. Exactly.
Yeah, like, that's his thing. And it made more sense for them to be separate companies.
It's tax purposes.
They may not always make sense. Yeah.
Well, one, let me say, they were both kind of long shots in their own way, and he didn't want one dragging down the other if it didn't work. So you separate him in a different... for tax reasons and for bankruptcy reasons, and they're both working, so I guess they're gonna.
I mean, there was a time when HP was one of the huge dominant ones in the Valley, and so many people worked there.
You try to convince yourself at all, James.
No, dude, it was.
I didn't say that's demonstrably true. They were. I mean, yeah. That is why Apple bought the Apple campus. That's why it is where it is, because it, you know.
Yeah, and you think about, like, it's Apple exists because of HP and their stupidity.
That's the point.
Oops.
Yeah.
And so I think that, it doesn't last forever. And that's okay. And some of these things don't happen overnight. If you think about the smartphone, like, back in 2006... Right, there was one huge dominant smartphone company that everybody used.
Yeah.
You have a smartphone? Do you want the BlackBerry Curve or the BlackBerry World? And if you're a real rebel, you get the Palm Pilot. But, like, come on. And the Treo, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was it. And
and we think of Google as this, like, you know, good. It's funny. It's, you know, you're right. These all become these institutional names that we sort of will be around forever. And that's just not true. I mean, like, as weird as it sounds, somebody could come up with tomorrow a better way to search, or just a better way to convey information. I mean, it's information technology. The thing that Google's trying to do is to be the one who figures that out. But they could,
which is smart.
Yeah, but they recognize that the way that they make money now is not the way that they'll make money in 20 years, because it just may not be the way people get information. And so they're trying to figure out what that next step is. Facebook kind of goes...
And if you think about the Industrial Revolution, it's really not that old. We're only now, honestly, starting to see enough of the patterns to go... You know, some of these companies who were household names, Kodak, one of them, like, everyone's like, this one's going on forever. And go, they're not. And we can now point to why they didn't go on. But you kind of got to wait 20, 30 years to figure it out and see that through enough cycles.
And you say, and it's like...
And I think they figured it out where they're going, you know, there's smart ways to invest our money to keep going. I think about, I had the example just a little bit ago. I can't think of it now. It'll come back to me. I don't know. I'm not.
I come back. I think that there's this sort of core idea too, that this view that oligarchies and monopolies are inherently bad. Well, no, it's the abuse of oligarchies and monopolies that's really bad. Like you brought it up before, this idea that what the consumer wants is a monopoly. Like, because they've found the most cost-efficient way to do it, and they're providing the goods and service at the lowest bottom money, so that nobody else can compete against them. That's a good thing. That's a good thing for the consumer. They found the rock bottom in the most aggressive way possible, and it's driven everybody else out of business. Now, as soon as they start abusing that, well, that's when, you know, okay, things come off the rails, and that's why we have antitrust laws. But monopolies aren't inherently bad, and neither are oligarchies. You know, as long as these companies aren't taking this in order to stifle innovation, like, I'm fine with it. It's probably good.
And at least at this point, none of them have a lock. I mean, there's arguments on for cellular companies.
Yeah.
Like Comcast and Time Warner Cable, but because they do have those, like, just barriers of entry that are a genuine issue. But for all these tech companies, no, not really. I remember my other example, ESPN, they announced they're doing some pretty big layoffs because they're starting to struggle, and they've done the math where it's like, they could be in a lot of trouble in 5 years. If their trend doesn't turn around, like, yeah, they're going to start owing a lot more money than what they're collecting
right.
for all these contracts. And it's going to be a problem. I mean, who would have guessed that ESPN was going to have an issue?
Yeah.
They were a huge juggernaut. They also kind of came out of nowhere. And so, you know, and remember Disney, like, they didn't even know that they bought ESPN. They bought ABC, who just so happened to own ESPN because they acquired another company that happened to own them that was like an oil-based type of thing.
Right.
And so, like, and Disney was like, what is this sports thing in the middle of nowhere? And then once they figured it out, went, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, and actually started promoting it, and it became what it was. And really what put them on the map was March Madness. Yeah. Like, that wasn't a thing until ESPN couldn't get the rights to a lot of the NBA games and the NFL games, and went, well, let's go after college. And there's this tournament that happens for college basketball. Let's just show it. Like, that was their brilliant insight, yeah. which I think we're coming up to it Monday, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, that was their thing that put them on the map, and people went ape crazy for it. And so, I don't know.
I would say, I mean, it's funny, because, I mean, we come, you know, to sort of bolster your point on all of this, is that these companies aren't around. They aren't necessarily around forever, not just ESPN, but, you know, it's funny. One of the reasons why it's easy to think of Apple as this company that'll be around forever is because they're a hardware company, and the iPhone's so dominant and everything. But it's like, you know, it's easy to imagine for somebody to come along and say, to actually crack the nut on, you know, heads up displays, as it were. You know, it's not going to be Snap, but somebody come along. And Apple just missed that boat for long enough for somebody else to be.
I hate to be this way. The current track that they're on, they're not going to hit the next wave.
Oh, yeah, no. Exactly.
They're going to be a Microsoft. It's obvious.
I completely agree. And that's been rough for Microsoft. It's easy to see. And part of Apple's problem is hardware has such a slow turnaround. They can't just start rapidly, you know, they can't set out hardware updates, you know, every couple of weeks while they copy.
Part of it's a culture issue. Yeah. They just don't have that anymore.
Well, and it's like, you know, Google, like I said, you could see somebody else come along and just be like, no, the way you make money based on advertising and eyes, it's just the idea of, like, there's this place you go to search information and we could put ads there. Like, that could go away. That very idea. You get that information a different way that ads don't really make sense on. And all of a sudden, Google's in this, like, well, how do we make money? Where do we put the ads?
If you're asking Siri and Alexa and even the Google Assistant for all of your information, and that's how you do most of your searches.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, Facebook, it's super easy to, well, you know, it's funny. I actually have the hardest time seeing them not being around in 10 years. I have the hardest time seeing them just, well, maybe than Amazon, seeing them just completely stumble. Because it's like Amazon's thing right now is that they're just the lowest prices. we're aggressively the lowest prices. Most convenience, lowest prices. It's very easy, and there's something valuable there. It's hard to see how you could only turn that over with a competitive change in a way that people would just be like, you know, that they wouldn't.
The thing I could see with Facebook is it's just a slow atrophy where, for whatever reason, their engineers that they have start to get older. And I mean, you saw this with HP, and they start to not see things. And Zuckerberg likes the way Facebook feels.
Yeah.
And he himself gets older and it starts to get stable. And it starts to have this feeling. And then you miss one or two things that you're a little slow to it. Like right now, they're pretty quick. Right. And even with Snapchat, they kind of waited a bit before jumping on it.
Yeah, you could see.
Whereas if you remember, there was a, this was, I don't know, it was probably over a year ago now. they wrote a long article that was like, when Google came out with Google Plus, it was like the day they announced it, Zuckerberg was like, we're canceling all vacation and weekends.
Yep.
You are here working on Facebook now.
This is a problem. And I think that, yeah, I would agree. And I would agree.
And they're already slower.
I say, but I don't see it as this like massive disrupt. And you can see it in that goo, or in that Zuckerberg is distracted. Like he cares a lot about Oculus. He's working on the next way that people will connect with each other. Like that's his thing. Like, Facebook proper isn't his end all be all. Like he really feels like, well, we got the Messenger nut cracked as well as we're gonna get. I mean, China's tough; like they won't let us in, so we're not gonna worry about WeChat right now. But we got WhatsApp, we got Messenger. We're doing good there for photo sharing stuff. Like we're the dominant player. Either you're uploading, if you're sharing photos, you're either doing it on Instagram or Facebook, you know, publicly. You know, and they're the one place where they don't dominate in photo sharing is against Snap, and they're working as hard as they can to take over that as well.
Almost working too hard.
Yeah, I actually read an article this week where it was like, someone was like, okay, far enough, Facebook, you're now making your products worse. And, which I think was interesting.
Yeah, so, yeah, and
By putting the Snapchat clone features front and center in Messenger, they're actually making it harder to use for the type of people that really like it as this sort of, you know, somewhat more sophisticated version.
Well, now you have the same problem we were just talking about with Google.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, I have a moment I want to share. Where do I show this moment?
Yeah.
I don't know anymore. Now I have to think about it for 2 seconds. I'm just not going to do it.
Yep. I agree. And I agree. And so I think that. Yeah.
Which they'll probably fix
that. I agree with you. I think at this point that Facebook is, they can be beat, but they're not going to, but there's not like this, there's not this impending shift that you can imagine just completely catching them off guard, and all of a sudden the company goes from, like, you know, where they are to completely different overnight. Like, they...
Yeah, I think if I had to look at the five and say, who's the most vulnerable at this moment, I probably would put Apple top of that list because of the lack of innovation and ingenuity that we've seen. I would say this.
I think
I know who I want to put for number two.
I think Apple has got they've got the case of the innovator's dilemma. They're the one that's got the most inevitable fall lined up because,
well, it's like they've got their head in the sand about it.
Exactly.
What it feels like.
Well, and it's the classic innovator's dilemma in that,
part of their brand,
which is this whole idea of, like, you got this thing that gives you this huge market advantage, and you focus on that exclusively, and you don't innovate things that would disrupt it because, you know, it's what makes you the greatest, and then somebody else does, and by the time you realize that somebody else has already disrupted you, it's too late. And I think that, yeah, I agree. I think that that's the biggest problem, is that the thing that comes after the iPhone, and I'm, you know, how, I say this almost every week, I think the iPhone's the worst possible screen size. There will be a better solution, and when it comes, your Apple, if they're not, like, already innovating it, they're completely out of luck, and that to me seems inevitable.
Who do you think's number two? I have a thought.
I think
But they know it, and that's the big difference.
Exactly. They're like, they recognize that the idea of going to a website and searching for something, and we can put ads on that website, which is the only way that they make money, is going away eventually. And so their goal is to be the one that destroys it.
Well, they've got their Google Suite users,
services. But how many ads can you put on? I would say the service-based thing, I think, is like, I feel like the service-based is... the idea of competing with the Amazon Web Services. They realize how much money Amazon is making out of it. And they're like, okay, that's not going to replace Google Search, but that could really help kind of diversify where our money comes from. And so if all of a sudden there's a the worm turns too early for us on search, we'll have someplace else we can go to be like, look, it's not a disaster. We've got another, you know, sort of form of income. So I think you'll see them going in that direction just so that they can have money coming from somewhere. And, but like, as in, but I think that something could come through and disrupt their main source of money in a way that would just would be completely disruptive. And like you said, I think the big thing is that they understand what Google search is it's just how you get information, and they think of Google search as the precursor to the computer from Star Trek. And it's easy for us to all kind of imagine that, yeah, that's where we go eventually, the computer from Star Trek. So that's what they're working on. And they want to disrupt themselves, and that gives you, even if that completely disrupts your ability to make money, that puts you in the best position to be the one who makes money off of the next, you know, position. You're still the dominant player. You just haven't figured out how to make it profitable yet, but you probably will. So, but then again, somebody else could all of a sudden be like, oh, I accidentally gave birth to a super intelligent AI, and it's going to be doing all your searches for you. And, you know, hopefully some evil dictator. The AI, that is. Probably will.
Yeah, yeah. If it's harder to pick the next three, to be honest.
Yeah.
Whether that's Facebook, Amazon, or Microsoft.
I think
Microsoft have pretty clear ones. I mean, Microsoft's already gone through it.
Yeah.
Right? And they're kind of on the upswing. Exactly. So you all feel good about it. And you're like, yeah, they figured out, like, enterprise software is the thing to do.
Yeah.
They've got a focus. That's going to continue. They seem to, at least for now, like, I can't.
Well,
it's from last year.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're the only other person making big money off of web services other than Amazon. I mean, it's the Azure suite and the.
Right.
You know, so they kind of get where they're at.
Well, and they've got Office, and they've got Windows, and they've figured it out.
Yeah.
And those aren't going anywhere anytime soon. Again, unlike Google, who's not making money off Android.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Oops. And I think, like, Amazon, again, like, pretty clear strategy. And they seem to be making money. The only way they could get themselves in trouble is if they accidentally overspend somewhere. And they cut their margins too close.
Right.
And then they have an issue.
Which they're looking at. And you can see them.
They raise all the prices by 2 pennies and they're okay.
I'm saying, you can see them responding to that because last year, or especially early last year, it was a big story of like how the Prime shipping was ballooning at an unbelievable rate, way quicker than they were making money off of it. And that if it kept down that trajectory, it'd be real issues just from Prime shippers doing 2-day free shipping. Like it wasn't a self-sufficient program. And what is almost every big story out of Amazon for the last 2 years has either been Amazon Web Services or, oh, look, they're buying another shipping company. Like, they're a company that understands where their vulnerabilities are, and they're looking for solutions to fix them. Their solution it's not to raise prices to make Amazon or to make Prime more expensive. Their solution is to make shipping cheaper. And you're like, oh, okay, it's a viable solution.
I get behind that.
And
get the monopoly going.
And like,
yeah, and I think with Facebook, they're also ad-driven, but...
It feels different. I can say I think with Facebook, yeah, it's the fact that they've got it pretty clear what their next step is. They're like, there's another platform coming. This is what we think it is, and we're all going for it. And everybody kind of agrees that there's like, okay, there's serious potential.
Even if they're wrong, they just
right
experience over to whatever the new one
exactly.
is.
You know, they don't seem like the. I think you're right in that they're reacting to minor threats slower than they used to. But I also think that's because they're trying to aggressively disrupt it. It's not because they think that their platform is, you know, so dominant it'll never fail. It's because they're getting ready to try to figure out what's next. And I don't think that's giving them too much credit.
And I'm thinking, too, it's interesting. So Facebook's still on the original founder. So is Amazon.
So is Google.
So is Google. Yeah, interesting. Because that'll be the other, like, because when Apple, when they were on the original founder, like, pff, they could do no wrong,
right?
You know,
and
that was like night and day difference.
Microsoft,
that was a huge struggle when they transitioned founders. And so I think that's the other thing that we forget is the companies might go on forever, but the people leading them don't.
Yeah.
And that'll
change. And the people who are in charge matter. I mean, they.
Yeah. And even if the founder stays the same, I mean, could you imagine it had it been Cook who got sick and died? I mean, he was so instrumental. Or what about Johnny Ives?
Right.
Right? Like, what if it was him? Like, that would have been huge.
Right.
You would have noticed that one at Apple, even if Steve Jobs was still around. So, right.
I might argue it's the fact that Johnny Ives doesn't care anymore that's part of Apple's problem right now.
The spiritual buddy died, so he died too. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's just the two guys that were in charge of making all of the product decisions aren't really involved in making product decisions anymore because one's dead and the other one's cares more about doing their stuff, which is fine, man. That's your choice. But it's clear from the direction of Apple that Johnny's just not nearly as engaged as he once was.
Well, that's because he's being led by an operations guy who doesn't get into the nuance and the details.
But even before Steve died, that was Johnny Ives was getting ready to leave, and it was kind of like, well, what do we do? I think, and it was, if you look at the timeline, I'm pretty sure how it comes down is Johnny decided to stay around and to not leave Apple while Steve was sick before everybody really realized how sick he was. It was in that period where they realized Steve was going to die soon that Johnny decided to stay around. And I think that he never really got his heart back in the game. You know,
that's fair.
I've heard people sit there and say that they should have kept Scott Forstall. Given the choice, Scott Forstall was way more engaged than
I had that
Johnny was.
Last week, actually.
Yeah.
I was just randomly thought about it. I was I wonder what Apple would have been like with him around.
Are you saying, obviously Johnny Ives is a better eye for design, but Scott Forstall was more engaged and more emphatic, and he was a good design guy. He just didn't have as good, he liked leather designs. What is this ugly? But, like, made a couple of bad decisions, right, you know, right in that, like, critical time period. Johnny and he didn't like each other, and Johnny won.
An opportunity for power, and he took it, and it didn't work.
Yeah. But I don't know. It probably is better this way, but I'm just saying, you hear people talk about it, you know.
I always wonder what Phil is like in these meetings where he's like, is he just happy go lucky, oblivious? Yeah, whatever, we'll market it however you want. Or does he get frustrated too?
Yeah.
He's like, we're putting an EQ on this one? Okay.
I have a feeling that Phil Schiller is a monstrously angry guy behind the scenes. He seems like the sort of guy that gets the vein pulsing, red in the face, yelling and screaming sort of guy. Like, I get a feeling that Tim Cook is terrifyingly calm, but I get a feeling that Phil Schiller loses his mind. And whereas Federighi, I think he's probably always the guy that's like making the like the oh my gosh, well that was uncomfortable, sort of like kind of trying to make jokes about it afterwards. Yeah,
but I can see that. Yeah. I can see that.
I can say because I'm trying to think of like who in this collection is the guy that loses their head angry, and he's the only one that like seems like he's got the spunk to lose his mind. And isn't just like coldly angry, because I feel like Johnny Ives is probably, well, Johnny Ives probably erupts too.
He's just intense.
I know.
He's probably just intense. He's never angry, but he's never happy either.
Yeah.
You're always like, I would be so nervous working around him all the time, because he would be thinking about what I said.
Yeah.
And interpreting it to a T, like, what was that word again?
Pedantic,
Pedantic.
Yeah.
You know, and how you, he would just, oh my gosh, I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Oh yeah, and I've
worked with someone like that, and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, and the worst part is you're not even sure if
he, which by the way, he was a surgeon, and I was okay with that.
Yeah, right. And the worst part about with somebody like that is you're not even sure if they're upset about, like, the product that you're talking about, how you're talking about it, or the fact that you didn't button the right button on your shirt. Because they could be equally upset about all three of those things, and like, and you just You just don't know which one they're judging you on. And I'm sitting there thinking, it's probably all three. It's why am I even trying? Like, I look like a schmuck.
You try to say something to add some levity to the situation, and it just doesn't work.
Doesn't crack a smile. Doesn't look any different. Almost
looks... Now he's annoyed that you were uncomfortable with what was happening.
Yeah. Well, you know what the worst would be? The worst are the people that are like, you can tell they're really, 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 really angry with you and what you're doing and how you are. They don't blow up on you. They blow up on, they get their coffee and their coffee's wrong. Like the classic, scene from movies, and they just erupt and throw the coffee. Like, that sort of a person where you're like, you're the problem. You're the one they're angry about, but they know they can't take it out on you because you're the person, fixing the problem. And so they take it out on somebody else, and you're like, I don't know these people for nothing. we might have this completely wrong.
Probably all great. Exactly. They're probably all super intense, honestly. Yeah. You kind of got to be to get to that level.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And anyway, so... Everybody's doomed. It's all over. Walt Wasberger is past his prime.
He seems to be living in the everything is static zone.
I know, which is weird.
Still innovation to come.
Because you think Mossberg wouldn't be somebody who would be like that. These oligarchs are here to stay. Like, this seems so disruptive in a way that
he's hanging out with the Verge staffers now.
Honestly,
it's end of the world.
The Verge staffers are driving me crazy. They're like,
that's his problem.
You know what the worst part is? I've gotten to the point with the Verge where I will click on the authors to see what articles they're writing, and I'm just like, there are authors on the Verge that I'm like, I gotta just subscribe to a couple of authors. The ones that actually focus on they're good tech opinion writers. Like they focus on the technology.
I did that with Giga. I had three people I follow.
Yeah, they focus on the technology. They focus on the companies. They kind of pay attention to the fundamentals. It might get a little iffy on their opinions here and there, but they just they stay focused on hey, these are the things that are important, and these are the things that actually affect them. It's engaging. It's enriching in what you learn. And there's the rest of the Verge, which is just stupid opinion that you're like, okay, even if you're right, you're ignoring stuff that you can't ignore in this conversation. What is wrong with you people? But I'm sure they get a lot of clicks because they, write catchy headlines. So this is how publications die. Anyways, so the League of Legends. Do you know about the League of Legends? Are you a League of Legends guy?
It's an MMO, right?
Yes, sir. It is StarCraft-esque, except you get a character who you kind of, it's real-time strategy and you can kind of click around and stuff. It's this weird merge between World of Warcraft, StarCraft, and a couple of different games, but it's making a ton of money. The game is free, which is the craziest part about a game that makes a ton of money. They make
nice
piles of money. They're one of the most valuable game companies out there right now. And their whole deal is they sell, if you've got your character who you've been building up, you can buy them a new costume. Doesn't affect the character or how well they play or how much you can play. It just affects how they look. And they charge $5 from it, and they make oodles of money off of that. But one of your giant competitive esports games, so there's lots of people that play it all the time. It's on Twitch all the time. People they're making tons of money. So there is actually a really big deal this week, though, because they had a cheater that they were dealing with. People, when you're talking about these esports and what is it that the NFL is always in? They're always going on about what they've got. It's the not the authenticity, but the integrity of the game. You know that they don't have anybody. They're not like the NBA with their crooked refs and stuff. No, our game has got integrity. So they make a big deal out about that because it makes it feel like it's kind of legit when the actual competitor is the competitor. Well, League of Legends is having a bit of a integrity of the game problem because there was a subscription cheating service that offered automated play, that is bots, to win League of Legends games. They they sued that company, League Sharp, and basically said, hey, that's not the spirit of the game. You're cheating, and we don't want you in there. So the deal is you let these bots play, and it would improve your scores and stuff, so you can get into different stuff. I don't even know why. Who would cheat, James? It's just not good for you. But so they...
People who want to make money.
Yeah. So the agreement has League Sharp paying $10 million, bans its software, and gives Riot control over its websites. League Sharp technically shut down in January, but the terms of the settlement weren't circulating until now. Riot's claims mostly revolved around the belief that League Sharp's tools violated the Digital Millennium Copyright Act by circumventing League of Legends' anti-cheating mechanisms. However, the cheat provider doesn't appear to have done itself any favors through its behavior. It allegedly attacked Riot servers, even doxed one of their developers' employees. They were jerks. But one of the reasons this is a big deal is because $10 million to Riot, the creators of League of Legends, is not much money, which I really want to be a company who can say $10 million is not much money. It is, but at the same time, it's way more than a symbolic victory. Because the big deal here is that these giant games, whether it's StarCraft or World of Warcraft or, you know, whatever, where there's real financial incentives to cheat, these big companies are billion-dollar companies. $10 million isn't enough to, you know, really change their month or their quarterly statements. The reason why this victory is a big deal is because there's a super strong disincentive to cheaters. Because for these companies, $10 million is a huge deal. And basically now what happens is if you are out there and you are running a website or a service that helps people cheat, you got to be way more conscientious because now there's real money at stake. You can't just, you know, for a long time it was like basically you would create a service and that would allow players to cheat, and your only worry was that at the next update the creator was going to, you know, disable your ability to cheat. But now if a legal system can come in and punitively punish you with tens of millions of dollars, it's a pretty big deal. And it kind of sets a new price point for, you know, what kind of damages are capable of being awarded. And like I said, for Riot, that's not that big of a deal. But for these cheaters, it's a huge deal. So, it'd be interesting to see. It's just as these esports evolve, you're going to see more and more stuff like this trying to stabilize the industry.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And also my last star article for the day, James.
All right.
Tesla had his, I wrote this. What would you get if Billy Mays had a green tech startup and a Twitter account? So this week, something kind of cool.
Billy Mays?
Yeah, he was the ad guy from TV, where he'd like, OxyClean, the OxyClean guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
make crazy deals. So Elon Musk promised to solve ongoing power problems in the state of South Australia. And this week, basically, the Tesla CEO made the promise on Twitter, replying to the Atlassian CEO and Australian billionaire Mike Cannon Brookers. The conversation came after remarks from Lyndon Rives, Tesla's vice president for energy products, who said earlier this week that his company would commit to solving South Australia's energy issues with 100 to 300 megawatt hours of battery storage. Musk and Rive said Tesla could install the required batteries within 100 days. We don't have 300 megawatt hours sitting there ready to go, he said, but I'll make sure they're there. Which is a pretty bold claim, because it's a ton of battery packups and everything. So Mike Cannon Brookers went on to Twitter and said, how seriously are you about this bet? If I can make the money happen and politics, can you guarantee the 100 megawatt hours in 100 days? And then Elon Musk tweeted back, Tesla will get the system installed and working in 100 days, and contract signature, or it's free. That's serious enough for you? I love Musk. Oh, my gosh. Musk and Tesla would get the system installed by and working within 100 days of signing the contract. For his part, Carmen Brookers requested 7 days to sort out politics and funding and asked the CEO to DM him the approximate quote for 100 megawatt battery farm at mates rates. Musk replied a short time later, specifying that Tesla would charge 250 kilowatt per hour for a 100 megawatt system. And the company was moving to a fixed open pricing structure for its battery farms. Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's too bad Twitter can't make any money because this kind of stuff is awesome.
Oh, man. It's shocking that they're not any big.
I know. Like just what? And this is just all. Yeah, it's great. It's so good. So good. I love it. Elon Musk, that serious enough for you? Don't have to be a brat about it, man. Jeez.
Oh, I love that
guy. I know. It's great.
Super funny. Is that serious enough for you?
No. It's good stuff, man.
Oh, so good.
He's a... So, yeah. It's pretty exciting and, you know, all sorts of cool... cool stuff is happening in that world.
See, I realize he's not one of the horsemen, but man, he's sure is making a case for it.
I know.
Just super entertaining and interesting.
Yeah.
You want to cheer him on, I think, is part of the other piece to it for some reason.
Right.
Like, dude, that's awesome.
Right, exactly. He, you know, he's got this. Yeah, he's awesome.
Which, by the way, apparently they did the 80 megawatts in California in 90 days. So it's like, not outlandish.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's, it's awesome.
We just gotta like you a lot, that's all. Oh, man. That's great. That's great. I mean, I love ratting on companies, but it's fun to celebrate those kind of things, too. Love it. Cool, man. Cool beans. Good show. Good episode. Good thoughts all around. I was a little concerned getting into it, where I was like, this is just a follow-up show to last week, but...
We made it interesting. That was
good. Yes. I agree. So, everybody, thank you for joining us, and thank you so much for listening to episode 285. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget, check out all the show notes with all the links at furlobros.com. And let's see, if you'd like to get the show notes sent directly to you, you can sign up on that exact same page on the right-hand side, episode 285 again. And finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. And if you'd like to also contribute, we have 4 different levels. We got fanboys, nerds, junkies, mavens, and they all have their own level of reward. So again, you can check out furlobros.com to find out how you too can become a patron. All right, I am James Furlow, and... my green Irish looking brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.